Hello and welcome to Lot Awful Movies number 18. Woo, man. How's it going, Andrew?
I am not kidding when I say I have never been happier. This is the happiest moment. I've been married for over 20 years. I have a 15-year-old child. This is the happiest moment of my life right here today, right now.
Well, let's not spoil whether or not what you're precisely happy about, because there's two amazing things about this episode. One is we're doing the fucking Running Man.
Oh, yeah.
And number two is we've got no illusions. Hey, woo! Noah, how are you doing?
I'm doing amazing. Look, I watch terrible movies for a living. I do this every week. I sit there and I watch a movie that I hate and I write notes. It's the only part of my job I don't like. And this time I got to watch one of the greatest movies of all time. This was like, I'm with you, Andrew. You know, look, Lucinda's not a patron here. I can say this is way better than Getting Married was, you know. Like, it's good to know that your wife doesn't Patreon the show either, but I have some jokes about her in here, too. No, I appreciate you guys letting me be a part of the one time that I'll ever have a chance to review a good movie.
A good movie? Oh, my God.
A classic.
Right. Not just a great movie. It is almost certainly, I mean, I think there's no argument that it's the greatest movie of all time, but there might be some debate. I think it may be the most legally accurate movie of all time. We're going to have to find out. We're going to get into it.
I only took one class
in post-apocalyptic law at Harvard, but so far
I don't even. I'll be up. The only one to say that this movie isn't better than My Marriage, and you guys can judge if that's because Lydia actually does listen to this or because that's my true feelings. I'll leave you to judge that. But no, this is a former. Supremely bad movie. This is the biggest piece of shit I've ever seen. I can't wait. I'll argue with Andrew all day on this. But The Running Man, we're doing this because you made us. Like, this is one of those things where people said, you should do The Running Man. I said, haha, that's a funny joke. There's nothing. Why would we do that? And then Andrew and everybody else said, no, let's do The Running Man. So that's why we're here. It's a little experiment. And you guys can say if I was wrong or you were wrong. We'll see.
If this is the definition of patron force, the patrons can force me to do anything they want from here on out.
Yeah, I just love that, like, because you guys have already had both of my co-hosts. You've had Eli on to do a movie with you, and you've had Heath on to do a movie with you. And I don't recall what they did with you, but I guarantee you it wasn't as awesome as The Running Man. So I appreciate the bragging rights as well.
Oh, yeah, definitely. We saved the best for last. And with that said, let's get into this intro. I've transcribed the premise here. And this is word for – I mean, this might as well be Judge Dredd. It's so weird how – exactly similar to Judge Dredd this is, pretty much.
Yeah, in a lot of ways, this movie inspired a ton of other great films. We'll get to a lot of those. Sure.
So here's our premise, everybody.
It was transformational, is what you're saying.
Here's our premise, everybody. By 2017, the world economy has collapsed.
Oh, yeah, that's totally unrealistic.
Natural resource. I love the wording of that, too. By 2017. They're not... Like, I feel like they messed up the tenses in this a little bit. Like, they're
hedging their bets. You know, they're like sometime between now and.
It's like, guys, it's your movie. You can just say in August of, you know, like you could just say, but no, somewhere
you know,
in 2017.
You know, you're not doing the like AP US future apocalyptic history exam here. Like, give them a break. You don't have to get the year right.
By 2017. The world economy has collapsed. So, I mean, so far, you know, somewhat accurate. Food, natural resources, and oil are in short supply. Okay. A police state divided into paramilitary zones. I love how they add that and it has no function whatsoever.
Nothing to do with anything. Nothing. Yeah, they just wanted to get zone in there somewhere. Yeah.
And paramilitary. Cool, they thought that was a cool word.
Yeah, because it's very clearly divided into military zones, right? Like that.
Yeah, right. What's so para about this shit?
Television is controlled by the state, and a sadistic game show called The Running Man has become the most popular program in history.
I'm sorry, I just have to cut in here to point out how apropos of nothing that is, right? So it's like, you know, there's a post-apocalyptic universe. Also, there's a show. There's a very popular show. What?
You're totally right. It's like, why are we talking about television? Like, go tell me about the world, the paramilitary.
Yeah, right. Seems like there's more important shit going on, is all I'm saying.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There's
it's
more
divided into paramilitary zones. Also, the Broncos are playing the Dolphins in the Super Bowl.
You're discounting the fact that the villain of this movie is an insane, sadistic reality TV show host. Okay, fine. Yeah, all right. Good.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely no comparison to today. None whatsoever.
I'm way more interested in that all AFC football Super Bowl that we just had.
I know. I reached for the Dolphins and I was like, that's an NFC team. Shit, no, it's not. I don't know why. I realized it the second after I said it. I figured you might. Yeah, no, I the fucking Dolphins feel like they should be an NFC team to me, but they're not. All art, music, and communications are censored. No, but by the way, hold on, Noah. This is the post-apocalyptic world. It could be an all AFC Super Bowl. All right.
Well, that's true. That's true.
Anyway, no dissent is tolerated, and yet a small resistance movement has managed to survive underground when high-tech gladiators are not enough to suppress the people's yearning for freedom. Dot dot dot. And then it makes us wait for what the end of that sentence is going to be. Dot dot dot. More direct methods become necessary.
I have so many issues with that sentence.
Go.
Okay, first of all, how are high-tech gladiators related to freedom yearning? What is the ratio of freedom yearning per gladiator? Also, how direct a method is high-tech gladiators, right? Like, almost any method would be more direct. And also, despite all of that, I just don't want to live in a world where high-tech gladiators aren't enough.
Yeah, that sentence... I think the dot, 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 there's two interpretations. One, the dot, dot, dot is, oh, creating suspense. The other is someone realized this sentence makes no fucking sense. They're like, dot, dot, dot.
Trying to save it. Oh, yeah. Shit.
It's like when I started the all AFC Super Bowl, I'm like, dot, dot, dot. Yeah. And therefore, more direct methods become necessary.
like Lord Awful Movies, this was definitely a calculon does one take moment.
Oh, my God. My note during this intro sequence is, this video game looks sweet.
Mine was Arnold Schwarzenegger is the only person who has his own class of movie fonts. Right? Like, there's no other movie that could have a Arnold Schwarzenegger font in it, but he's got like six or seven.
Oh, God. So
I just want to point out that in preparation for doing this movie, I wrote down all of the Arnold Schwarzenegger movies that I believe that I've seen at least 50 times. There are 11 of them.
Oh, my God.
All right? Like, almost all of which I own on both VHS and DVD. This is one of them. Like, if I wanted to break it, like, this was included in Amazon Prime or whatever, so I just watched it on my computer. But if I wanted to break out my VCR and watch The Running Man, I also could have done that.
Oh, my God, I love that. Do you want to name a few? Throw a few others out there. You named 11, or you enumerated 11.
Oh, yeah, no, I got the list here. It's Conan the Barbarian, Conan the Destroyer. Wilt Chamberlain may have fucked 50,000 women, but we all got fucked on that one. The Terminator, obviously. Terminator 2, Commando, Running Man, Predator, Twins, Red Heat, Total Recall, and True Lies.
Those are all in an infinite way tie for first place among greatest movies of all time. My favorite Predator story. I'm gonna link this
in
the show notes.
Your favorite Predator story.
Oh my god, this clip is amazing. So, like Predator, this movie stars both Arnold Schwarzenegger and future Minnesota Governor Jesse the Body Ventura, and so there's this elaborate sequence where Schwarzenegger tricks Jesse the Body Ventura into betting him that he's got bigger biceps than Arnie, and it's this elaborate like double kind of game where he like leaks something and has the set designer casually say, "Well, I heard Schwarzenegger's biceps are." It's you have to watch the video. It's only a couple minutes.
That
long.
Happened in real life or in the
it
movie?
Happened in
I
real
haven't
life.
Seen. I'm not.
It happened in real life in behind the scenes for Predator. So.
This is where I have to confess, like, I've only seen, like, two of the movies you just listed, and one of them was this movie. So, no, I've seen Terminator 1 and 2, but then I've seen True Lies, but that's about it, actually.
We should watch Terminator, like, right after we finish this record.
We should just do a 22-hour marathon of all 11 movies that I just listed is
there
what we
go.
Should do.
Yeah.
Oh, man. True Lies, good movie, though. Anyway. So we'll start our movie now.
True Lies, True Lies is a good movie, but it's without a doubt the weakest one on Noah's list. But anyway.
Uh-huh, sure.
Well, I'd say Red Heat is the weakest, but yes, True Lies.
Yeah, agreed.
So Arnold and company are definitely in a helicopter and not using a green screen. That's the first note. And
I'm sorry. Little pedantic moment. You're never going to get through this movie. I guarantee this is going to be like a 5-hour record because I have shit like this. On the panel on his helicopter, they have the longitude and latitude, and the helicopter is moving at 1 degree per second of longitude. That's 69 miles. I just want to point out
that sounds like
that helicopter's going about 250,000.
Oh, good.
It's the future, okay?
It's 2017, after all. Yeah.
But my nitpick for this scene is that Arnold Schwarzenegger's character, Ben Richards, is for some reason wearing an old-timey, like, tin seven-pointed sheriff star while sitting in the cockpit of the helicopter. It definitely looks like something he wanted out of a
movie. Yeah. It's so fucking weird. I just want to know how this happens. Because, oh my God, the acting is so fucking bad. Everybody is bad. And except well, there's like one good actor I'm going to get to later.
Richard Dawson is unbelievable in this.
Amazing.
Actually, no, he is okay. But all of the actors in this scene are not real. Like, I don't, the porn actors are better than the actors in this scene. And I don't know how you could even find actors this bad to be in a real movie. This would really be a very weird
porn scene. I just want to point out.
Yeah, it'd be pretty standard.
Let's get judgy. Let's all just get judgy about everybody's porn habits. Let's do that for a little while. That'll be fun.
So, and what I love about how bad this movie is we cut right fucking into it. Like, there's not a second of setup. It's just Arnold's flying, as you said, 250,000 miles an hour in a in a helicopter. And he's like, oh, there's some people. And the orders are, oh, can you massacre those people? And he's like, no, I will not massacre those people. And then that like, just with no character development, it's just, hey, how has he been doing this job this whole time? And this has never come up until the second he's on screen.
You're a people massacrer.
Because this is the first part of the law that this movie gets 100% correct, which is police can, of course, absolutely massacre crowds of unarmed people. Like, man, I don't see any problem.
Obviously.
With that.
Yeah.
So. Now, is that according to current law or this or 2017?
It's only post-apocalyptic law. Yeah.
And then here's what I love, because they start fighting. Like, he says no, and then everyone else is like, oh, this guy's not going to massacre people. And they start fighting, and my note is, if we're all fighting in this helicopter, who's flying the green screen?
Yeah.
Go ahead, Andrew.
No, you go.
Oh, I've got nothing.
Oh.
I'm leaving it in.
Thanks. That's crack editing by Thomas Smith. Yeah.
Well, nobody had anything. You were interrupting each other. You go. No, you go. No, you go. Neither of us has fucking anything.
The only thing I had was that the plot demands that the other three dweebs in the helicopter can subdue Arnold fucking Schwarzenegger.
Sometime later, now he's in a weird labor camp thing.
18 months later. I mean, you got so pissed off because they weren't specific about when the global economy collapsed. And then you're like, when they give us the exact 18 months. Yeah, so now it is the future. It's 2019. Thank you very much.
Oh, yeah,
and we're
good point.
Inside the Wilshire detention zone, which I could have told you even if I hadn't rewatched this movie.
Oh, I love it. Oh, we picked the right person for this one. We really did.
Oh, I should also point out, too, in case you're curious, I actually read the book that this was based on. It was a Stephen King book that he wrote under the pseudonym of Richard Bachman.
Right.
And it has no similarity whatsoever to the movie that we're watching. But if you're ever curious, if it ever comes up, I will be able to answer the but what about the book questions.
Well, okay, I was going to bring that up later. But yeah, the thing about this movie is it has some good prediction, or, like, you know, it's sort of like Idiocracy, where, like, oh God, there's some elements of it where you're like, man, they're tapping into something. But that's because Stephen King wrote a book. It's a, this movie is 100% yeah. shit. We can argue later, but anyway, okay.
So my question, because obviously we do a lot of the John Grisham novels that have been turned into movies because they're terrible, and everybody always says, oh no, like the books are so much better. And I picked up and started flipping through one, and like, maybe it was just later John Grisham, but it was things like, and then a tall, ruggedly handsome, kind of Tom Cruise type walks into the, right? Like, it was very clearly written knowing that his schlock was yeah. going straight to movie. Is the short story like that? Does it say, you know, an impossibly over-muscled Austrian playing a cop from California walks onto the scene?
No, interestingly enough, you didn't really picture Arnold as you were reading it.
So wait, hold on. Just let me ask this, though. In the book, after Arnold explodes a fire-shooting guy, does he say, well, the hothead? Is that like,
there's only so much Stephen King can do.
Puns, yeah, the exquisitely bad puns. Is that in Arnold's contract? Is it like, does he have to? You guys know, you're the Arnold experts. Is this him?
I actually have sort of a serious question about that. Andrew, where would you say this? Because I feel like this is the number one film, maybe this one or Commando, of his terrible puns after killing people.
Oh, yeah. No,
where would you?
I would say this is number one in terms of the like bad Rainier Wolfcastle type one liners. And true story, like the line of "I'll be back" in Terminator was completely ad libbed. They had no idea that it was going to become a catchphrase. And Arnold Schwarzenegger gave an interview in which he was talking about how he came out of the premiere and people kept coming up to him going, "Do the line, do the line, do the line." And then he later wrote it into all of his as a writer and all of his contracts that he has to say, "I'll be back" in his action movies. So he says it in this one. It's great.
It's so ridiculous.
And they actually did something with it, right? That like, that's the brilliant writing. Well, we'll get to it. We'll get to it. But it was funny when he did.
Yep.
Oh man. So, I mean, he's in a labor camp. He's bearded now. That's how you know, as you say, they're really dedicated to getting the facts right. It's been 18 months. So he grew a beard. And he's carrying something very heavy, naturally. And
that's
like,
also in his contract. Yeah.
He actually brought that steel girder with him to the set. He's like, here, this will work. I had this at home.
And you can see other times in the movie where, you know, the script calls for somebody to lift something heavy. It's very obviously styrofoam, but I believe that's a real like steel I-beam that Schwarzenegger just like, I had this lying around in my dressing room. There is also a 90-second camera pan on his biceps, which I assume there was also in his contract. It was it was a little delicious, I gotta tell you.
I just want to know the fascination that you guys have with Arnold Schwarzenegger. I kind of get it a little bit, but I still, there's a part of me that wonders, you know, like what have we all, how did this happen? Like, how did people actually watch these movies?
I think a big part of it, though, is that, like, when Andrew and I were watching this movie first, originally, we were kids, right? So just the same way that, you know, that you thought when you saw it, like, oh, wow, this is what life is like, huh? Boy, I sure hope I don't commit a crime. You know, we saw this movie as kids. And look, I mean, there's a hockey player with an exploding puck that attacks them later. This is not I don't need to then explain why I was entertained by it as a 12-year-old kid. Like, all right, no, and the other thing too is that you've got to keep in mind that no one was doing these self-aware action movies at this point, or very few people were. Like, this was a sort of a new genre. Or it was a new way of bending the old genre of like.
I'm curious. Do you think it really is self-aware?
Oh, clearly.
Yeah, I think it is.
There's a poster for a TV show called The Hate Boat on the wall.
Oh God! All right, I'll. You know what? You're right. You make a good argument. You're right. So then they're trying to steal the code to disarm the sonic fence to get out of this thing, and oh my God, this is so funny because. They like do steal the code, but then the dude's got bad signal or something. And he like, so like there's some question as to whether it's activated. And then one guy, just because this is what they do in these movies, decides he's just going to run for it anyway. And so he just runs for it. And they're all wearing these little neck thingies. And the guy crosses the sonic fence and his head just blows off. Yeah, it's you couldn't just wait with everybody else.
Because,
somehow everybody else
deserve that, right? Because we've earned his head blowing as an audience. So, and keep in mind that like right after that, they get the code right and everybody runs away. So like this was a superfluous head explosion.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, it's so good.
We just they were like, yeah, but we're not going to not blow up somebody's head in this movie. I mean,
they were just trying to think of a way, like, how do we, like, we need somebody's head to blow. Somebody's heads are going to roll.
I'm just a little disappointed that both of you skipped over Arnold picking up one of the guards by the dick and hoisting him with the line, give you a lift. And it is very obviously like a $12 tackling dummy, too, when he's got him up in the air. Oh, it's so good. I'm going to be pointing out this one-liner.
Also, as they're trying to break into the code, he says, shut it down or we'll all lose our heads.
Oh,
but, like, that's just literal, you know.
That's true. I can't tell him. I love too the puns that he thinks of. It must be him just dishing these out. It's gotta be. I don't know, because it's every movie he's in, unless he has a guy following him around.
The pun guy.
Yeah.
Oh god, that could be Heath's job.
and like what I love is some of them just they don't even make sense. Like, most of them don't even make sense. Some of them are like, okay, that's just a, you know, it's like a groaner. But at least it's like, I get the pun. But this one, give you a lift. There's nothing.
He lifts him up and then he.
There's no, you need two meanings, right? Like, what's the other thing? Like, he just was going to give him a ride to the airport or something? Like, what is, there's no reason to say that. Oh my god. Anyway, so what I love though about that part is there's some dude who can't wait 90 seconds for them to do the code. Like, he's wearing a bomb on his neck. And he's like, I'm sorry, I can't wait for you to do this code. I just need to sprint for it. Like, it's amazing. I want to know who that guy is. I really do. I want to get to know that guy more.
That's poor Chico. He's the cautionary tale for all of us in this movie.
Yes, exactly. This movie's about patience. There's a lot of deep shit in this movie. All right, Thomas, you might not recognize all of the deep shit.
Well, feel free to educate me.
It's a metaphor. So then, come on.
Then we get to Mick Fleetwood, right?
Is that, yes,
we're at Mick Fleetwood, which is cool. This is Dweezil Zappa's here too. Yep. Star-studded cast.
Yeah. We also meet Dweezil Zappa in this one.
He's doing his best Che Guevara impersonation.
Exactly.
And the guy. So they're taking off the bomb. They're disposing of the bomb necklaces in the rebel lair, and somehow the guy just knows Arnold was a cop. They don't really explain that. He's like, "This guy's a cop." And they're like, "What? Okay."
Well, because he was the propaganda that the network put out suggested that he was responsible for that big massacre that he refused to. Where he refused to massacre people,
Mick
so he's
Fleetwood,
a well-known criminal.
Mick Fleetwood is a rebel who knows that the government is bullshit. So I feel like he wouldn't be the kind that would buy into the government propaganda, but that's okay.
Well,
you don't have to have
Mick
consistent
Fleetwood
characters.
Is the one who argues with the old guy who says that, but he was a cop. I mean, that's
true.
Not propaganda.
So, but I love what I love about
this movie
is,
makes perfect sense.
Yeah. He's smoking a cigar. And,
yes!
then as, and then
like
as
they
the guy's
stopped
gonna,
at a cigar shop after they got out of the prison, but before they got to the neck collar removal center.
Let's get the no, because for Thomas, the sequencing is important, right? So it is break out of jail, go to World Gym, stop by at the cigar store,
yes!
then take our bomb off.
Grab a t-shirt,
Yeah, post-apocalyptic world, but they still have World's Gym there. Don't worry. It's not that bad. Yeah.
It was in tiny print. It was actually, the shirt says, post-apocalyptic World Gym. It's just that post-apocalyptic is tiny print.
But he's smoking the cigar already, and then he sits down, and the guy's going to undo his head explodey device. And he says, no sense losing your head over it. And then he lights an already lit cigar. And lights it more and smokes it more.
Well, sometimes you do have to do that on a cigar. You have to, like, relight your cigar sometimes.
Yeah, it's I love it. This is going to be a battle of Noah's going to justify every stupid thing in this movie.
Yeah, Noah's 100%
idea. Wait until we get to Sub-Zero, bro.
Yeah.
I do want to point out just how delightfully naive the resistance plot here is, which is they're going to jam the uplink computer, and so instead of broadcasting propaganda like the Running Man, they're going to broadcast the truth. And I'm just thinking,
right,
like,
yeah.
Oh gosh, if you made this movie today, like, you know. I was going to say that later.
That's the thing that's at the core of all these kinds of movies is this idiotic idea that, no, if you only broadcast the truth, then everybody all of a sudden will be like, oh, okay, that's the truth.
It's like, right.
No, yeah. We found that that's not actually how it works.
Yeah.
But anyway, we'll get to that later. So what happens is, like, I guess two of the guys stay with the ragtag group of, you know, rebels, and then Arnold's like, no, nah, I'm not going to do that, I guess. And so he leaves to become a construction worker or something? To explain this.
He leaves to find his brother, who is not in prison, who can help him get out.
Why
of the state.
Why is he dressed as either a construction worker or as part of... It was the village people, right? He was...
Well, back in the 80s, we called that diversity.
So he's not a he dresses as a construction worker to blend in, I guess. I don't know.
But, yeah,
so
he fooled you. Yeah. He clearly fooled you.
He goes to what was his brother's apartment. Living now in his ex-brother's apartment is a hot woman who works out in lingerie, I guess.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Immediately, like, upon getting home, she immediately strips down to lingerie to do her workout.
Yeah. Go ahead.
She has an Alexa.
Yep. Go ahead, Noah.
Yeah, so when she first walks in, first of all, like, you can tell it's the future because all the lights are blue. She walks in and she says to her Alexa, she's like, lights, television, toast.
I'm so glad Noah made that point, because, you know, like, it's you guys, it's been a little bit longer, but we've all had office jobs, and, like, did you come home, you know, in the afternoon, in the early evening, and just want to curl up with a nice hot piece of toast?
Well, I would always put the bread in the toaster beforehand so it would be ready for that voice activated toasting.
Oh man.
Toast. Yeah, not like, is she work? I guess she works the night shift. I don't know. She wants to come home to a nice hot.
She could need some energy for the Teddy workout. You got to put in some calories. Get some toast.
Oh, man.
Can we talk about the workout screen?
Yeah, this is where I actually do love this part, because, like, I'm with you guys on this, because Jesse the Body Ventura is Captain Freedom leading this workout, and it's just fucking phenomenal. It's brilliant.
Yeah.
Jesse Ventura with a full head of hair as Richard Simmons. Oh, hell yeah. Give me that all day by the spoonful.
And then what's even better, it must be some rules, futuristic rules about apartments, because not only is she in lingerie for no reason, now Arnold has stripped down to his underwear.
Yep.
Right? I mean, he's in boxers and a tank top. Because he's in his brother's apartment? Like, what?
You get to see a lot of Arnold in this movie, I just want to point out. Then that's, you know, statistically speaking,
There must have been some deleted scene where, like, one of the entryways has some computer that takes off your clothes or something. Like, why?
Right.
Why are they both
in their underwear? To pull himself up over the. Yeah, no, I get it. Also, but while he's doing this, we also get to meet Damon Killian, right? Like, kind of in between the him getting to the apartment and him meeting her scene. This is where we first meet our villain, who is, I would say, like, top five movie villain of all time.
Oh,
here.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
I'll let you guys talk about that. That's fine. It's not a bad performance. I'll give him that.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, he's a game show host that was asked to play a game show host. And apparently, according to, like, people who work for him, he was every bit the douchebag that he is in this movie. Like, he actually did kill stunt doubles for spite and stuff.
That seems potentially libelous. And I
didn't say it's on IMDb. I cited my sources.
The only law Andrew will tackle in this episode is protecting us from the legal implications of what Noah says.
I love when we meet Killian. There are two sequences. First, we get a long shot of him pulling up in a candy apple red limousine, which is the most 80s thing ever. I mean, and this thing is clearly like an upscaled AMC Concorde with some fiberglass put around. Like it is absolutely what they thought a limo would look
only
like
that,
in
not only that, that's all true. Not only that, the building is fake. It's a, like they've rendered a futury looking building. I'm pretty sure, like, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
It looks fake.
As a matte painting, but over the MGM studios, I believe.
Yeah, but the reason I'm not sure is because it's the most unimpressive building ever. So yes. It's like they, like, I think they rendered a build, like they drew, you know, whatever, however you do that. But if they were going to do that, why didn't they just make one that was actually futury and impressive? It's like, it's just kind of an okay building.
Yeah, so all they did, it's a matte painting. That's what they did before CGI, which is basically a painting that leaves a hole for the video projected into. And all they did was like added 22 stories to an existing building. Yeah, that was it.
Yeah, which makes it not even particularly impressive.
No,
by
it's not like large for that city or anything. Yeah.
So I was so confused because I was like, that's definitely fake, but why? Like, you could have just found a building. Like, anyway. So yeah, the Killian decides that they need a running man who's, you know, strong, who's a real Arnold Schwarzenegger type, rather than all the pipsqueaks that they've got, I guess, for ratings. And he sees the real footage or something, the newsreel footage of Arnold having gotten arrested, and he's like, that's the guy I need. Or no, Arnold escaping.
Oh,
like,
we have to talk about the video selection first though.
Oh, please. Yes. Yeah. Let's not glaze over the fact that there was a goddamn baby in it.
Wait, what? I missed that. I must have been
writing. Go ahead. I'll let Noah take this one. This is great.
Well, yeah. No. So, like, they've got him looking at different screens of potential contestants, and one of them is like a 13-month-old baby just sitting there in a diaper.
Yeah, so, that's awesome.
Yeah, again, so towards that, was the movie self-aware question? I think that's strong evidence in our
I hear you, and also maybe one of my favorite lines in this entire movie is right here, because the guy, you know, wants Richard Dawson, you know, Killian wants Arnold, and they're like, oh, you can't get him. He's, you know, whatever, for however the contract works with the government for the show. And at some point, he or somebody says, get me the president's agent.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, you, never mind. You did predict everything.
Yeah,
I'll take it back.
Exactly.
You win.
But before that, so yet again, this movie gets the law 100% correct, because I am positive that producers at Fox News talk to the Justice Department every single day. And I know that
right.
The Trump DOJ has an entertainment division. No doubt about it.
You're right.
I know. You know what? When you're right, you're right. It seemed ridiculous. Even 3 years ago, this would have been absurd. And now you're like, no, that's right. Where are the paramilitary zones? They're coming up. I'm sure.
Have you tried to walk by a Trump Tower building? That's not a
yeah,
joke.
Actually,
that's
in Chicago.
A sad real thing that he has armed paramilitary guards outside his building.
Oh, really?
In New York. Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it really disturbed my son when we went to Manhattan. That's
wow.
That's not a joke.
Way to bum us all out with reality.
Sorry.
No, I'm just kidding. This movie
is all
reality,
man.
So then Arnold is taking the woman whose name is like Amber. He's taking her somewhere to hide. He's going to just try to escape. And what I love about this is whenever Arnold Schwarzenegger is trying to blend in, that's my favorite
yes.
thing. The 7 foot tall, like ripped but he's got a Hawaiian shirt on. So like,
and a hat and yeah. a hat and sunglasses
and chinos.
Oh, that's amazing. Yeah. Yeah. No, that's such an amazing shot. So like they're going to Hawaii, but he needs to kidnap her because he needs her travel pass, because you have to have a travel pass to travel. Mm-hmm. Of course, then she doesn't have a travel pass, so none of it makes sense. This is the one time where the script kind of falls apart.
Yeah,
I gotta
well, that's
honest.
So funny. We can switch roles and say, I actually do think it makes sense, because what happens is he does show her travel pass, and then he asks for his travel pass, and he says, oh, she's probably got it in her purse, like she does with all my credit cards. and then causes a commotion. And then naturally what you do when you're faced with an obviously Arnold Schwarzenegger in a stupid disguise as a security guy is you say, well, I don't want 3 seconds of commotion. Definitely go through.
Go right on in. This was maybe the first sign that this movie was shot pre 9/11. So
yeah, they didn't predict that. So that, but then she sees a security guard and he just shouts and he's captured right away by way of a shooty net thingy, which I love. Those are always fun.
There is like literally nothing that Arnold hasn't been shot with, yeah, right? Like if you can conceive, like there's a movie out there somewhere where somebody gets him with a t-shirt gun, I'm sure.
As we said, the producer wants Arnold to be in the show. So I think the way he convinces him is, I guess they also have his friends. Do we find out how they even got his friends? Or
no,
they?
No,
okay. Yeah, again, another thing that they don't bother telling us. But whatever, they got his friends, but not the rest of the rebel group. They're just his friends, coincidentally. And he says, well, if you don't do this show, if you don't agree to do, which I don't know why they need his consent, because truth doesn't matter in this world. But for some reason, you need him to sign a document, even though you can fake everything else in the world.
So here, I can explain the law here. This is an important thing. So legally speaking, they need Arnold Schwarzenegger's consent because he's an A-list star. So he's got to sign the document. But they threaten that they're going to put on Weiss and Lachlan because they're just supporting characters. And those guys, you don't need their consent at all. It's just
not to be too pedantic on this, but they do like kind of explain that they're like, oh, he's military. We never get the military prisoners. So like, I guess the other guys are just like state prisoners. But is it up to Arnold,
you think that's how it would work? It would be up to Arnold to decide if he gets to go like as a military. If they don't get military prisoners, wouldn't it be because of some military policy or some shit?
Well, yeah, but they don't. But the military didn't have them, so they're the ones that end up with them. And you can get like it's like, you know, whatever.
You're right.
Like a
trial, it makes perfect
bite.
Sense. 100% right. You're right. Okay.
But all
so
three
now
of them were in the Wilshire zone to get. Sorry. I don't mean to be undercutting my own argument here.
He wasn't active duty military when he was arrested, though.
They don't need any consent to put the other two people in the game. But for some reason, he needs to strong arm Arnold by saying, if you don't do the game, we'll put the other two guys in the game, your friends. And he's like, oh, I don't want that. So he agrees to do it.
Yeah.
Well, but also I think we should probably not glaze over the fact that Richard Dawson clearly wants to slather Arnold Schwarzenegger in chocolate sauce. That is like a major that scene, because like every time he sees him, he's like, hey, cutie pie. I didn't judge it. I just pointed it out. I just wanted to make sure that we didn't glaze over it. He has to say yes because this is the only reason he'll have to strip down to his underwear for another scene.
And what I don't get here is they do some medical stuff to him, which I thought, okay, this will come into play later. Like, because I've never seen this. I've only seen, as a kid, I saw the first 5 minutes of this movie and was terrified. That's all I had seen. So I see this and I'm thinking, well, if they've done all this medical shit to him, so does that mean even if he wins, then maybe they'll have some tracking or like they can press a button and he dies? Nope. Never matters. Never comes into play.
Just an excuse for him to be. They've got like NASA launching a Martian lander worth of doctors at computers and shit around him. But this is just an excuse to have him in his underwear again.
Never matters. Anyway, so they do that. And let's see. I think this is where. Oh God, I love it. This is the only other thing I like about this movie. Or man, there might be like a handful, but the Amber girl is back in her apartment, I think, and she's seeing the newsreel, the news stories, and she notices that they've lied about Arnold because they say he like killed two people or shot two people when he was being captured. And she knows that that wasn't true. So then, you know, she's starting to see, there's this government's lying to me. And then there's a commercial for another reality show called Climbing for Dollars. And it's a guy on a rope trying to climb to get like some money, but below him is like rabid dogs. Oh, it's so good.
But okay, so I just want to point out the illogic of his strategy in that, because like it's not like those dogs are going to climb the rope, right? Once you're a little ways up the rope, I feel like you could just like wrap your leg around it, make sure, okay, even if they gas me, I'll be fine now. Anyway, yeah, so I don't think he was a very good climbing for dollars contestant.
Yeah, and if you know that they gas people on that show, I'd be like, why are you participating? Because that's I don't for all it doesn't seem like that's a crime, a criminal show, because he's trying to get dollars. So like, why would you ever agree to do anyway? But it's still yeah. funny.
So Fox, we know yeah. you're listening to this show, and I think you just heard that Noah and Thomas both want to be on Climbing for Dollars. So there you go.
I feel like I'd do good on Climbing for Dollars. I think I would. I'd do better than that. I couldn't handle the Running Man, but I could kick and ass on.
Then we get okay. You know what? I there's another thing that's my favorite thing about this movie. So there's
we're up to like
three or four things, and then everything else is really fucking stupid. But this is where Arnold is being kind of led, I think, to like the beginning of the game. And someone comes up and says, I'm your court-appointed theatrical agent.
This is my favorite character in the movie.
So this is where you can break down the law. So he's the agent, while he's being led to the game, the agent is reading a nonsense contract. And I want to know, Andrew, legal analysis.
Oh, this contract is great. He is literally walking by going, so ad hoc, the party of the first party, de facto, yes. the party of the second. Like, literally, yes. if he were to stop and go, fax mentis incendium, et cetera, it would right. be no less ridiculous. It was great.
This is all the law that's in the movie, and that's all you got?
Alphabetically. It's amazing.
I expected, Andrew, since this is the only law in the movie, I expected you to have transcribed the entire thing and to break down sentence by sentence what's happening.
I don't know what you're talking about. There are like clearly 12 different legal principles about post-apocalyptic law that I'm prepared to discuss at great length.
Court-appointed theatrical agent is pretty damn good, though. Yeah. I got it. And credit to, you know, Stephen King, I'm sure, for that, right? I mean...
No, that's not the
it's that's not no. in the book.
No, no, nothing. The book is literally nothing at all like the movie. There's a character named Ben Richardson, and he's on a TV show, or Ben Richards rather, and he's on a TV show called The Running Man. That's about where the similarities end.
Wow, I would have sworn that court appointed theatrical agent was too good of a thing to think of for whoever the fuck wrote the rest of this terrible movie.
D'Souza.
Yeah.
I also want to point out, like, so because this is the point in the movie where, like, you know, the show is starting as they're bringing Arnold in, and we have the 80s dancers.
Yeah,
I love how 80s the future looks. It's proactively retro. But at first, I was just like, why is 9% of this movie these women dancing? Yep. Right. And then I discovered that the dancing was choreographed by Paula Abdul.
Paula Abdul, Forever Your Girl. Yeah, I have these dancers as, why do they all have Noah's hair being shot through slats like this is a heart video?
You can take the hair out of the 80s, but you can't take the 80s. I don't
know. Most of the movie is the dancers, it feels like. And it's like someone puts, but you can tell like, oh, they're actually doing choreography. They're actually together. It looks like more work than was put into any other aspect of the film.
Well, it makes
Dynamo's
sense.
Wardrobe was not easy, okay?
And it makes sense in continuity because every single episode they're sending unarmed prisoners into this game grid to get massacred by people with weapons. Like, the actual fighting has got to be like 4 minutes of each 3-hour show.
Yeah, so right.
You need dancing.
Yeah, how does this show usually go?
Yeah. Then we get the creepiest, something that I hope would not happen post Me Too, which is the Amber girl, she's trying to like sneak in to find out the truth about whatever happened in Bakersfield with the Bakersfield massacre, which Arnold was accused of. And she, I don't know, somehow she bumps into like her blonde friend or something. Arnold walks by, you know, doing kind of the perp walk thing. And oh my God, it's so fucking creepy because the blonde girl is like way too into the idea of Arnold raping her. She's like, yeah, imagine what he would do to you. And it's like, oh my God.
There's two things about that scene that are absolutely amazing to me. Number one is Amber's space purse. She has a space purse. it's so ridiculous, 1950s idea of future purse. But also, like, yeah, the turn here is that her friend is just like, wow, he's so big. Why wouldn't he have just raped you when he had you and your teddy all tied up? And she's like, yeah, why wouldn't he have raped me? He must be a good guy. Like, that's what it took back in the 80s to be the hero. It's like, well, yeah, I mean, could have raped her. That was it.
I just want to point out that the two of you have passed over the blonde friend's lines, which are, he could have raped you and then killed you, or killed you and then raped you. And you're like, wait, what? Like, why is she sexually fantasizing about being murdered and then raped? Like, that really, really made me happy that we had Noah on this weekend, not
she
Eli.
And someone, the director, the director must have been like, no, we want you to say this, but like in a you're sexually interested in the idea of being murdered and then raped?
Oh, she is into it. Like, yeah, it is.
Yeah,
oh,
yeah. And she, the first few reads, she must have been like, you know, reading it like terrified, like, hey, what if he married? And then the director's like, no, we want this to be
sexy. Sexy it up.
And because it was the 80s, she had no option.
I feel like necrophilia jokes in Hollywood peaked right here. That's why there aren't any anymore. They're like, we really can't outdo The Running Man. We might as well not even try.
Oh, my God. It's so weird. It's so weird.
But,
okay.
But to cleanse our palate from that, we then get a quick cut back over to the court-appointed theatrical agent.
Yes.
Who is the greatest of all time. And at his phrases here are res ipsa loquitur, which is the thing speaks for itself. And then ad infinitum, which I should not have to translate. And then Arnold is signing the contract and hilariously stabs him in the back with his pen.
For being a lawyer, right? Like, that was the 80s, right? Like, in the movie, we're like, fucking lawyers, am I right? Stab him in the back.
I love it, too, because Arnold's character, as we go forward, goes out of his way to not hurt anyone. Like, you'll see later, he literally chooses not to kill someone who was hunting him for sport. But lawyers now, okay, that fuck them. Yes. Like, you stab the lawyer in the back who's his job helping you.
And they didn't even put like a blood pack in there. I mean, it literally is just played for comic relief. Like, you just see him kind of scurry off trying to reach the man. We're all supposed to be like, oh, that's really funny. He's got ink buried into, 3 inches into his back now.
Yeah, he'll probably die of an infection of some kind. Hilarious.
Please do not. This is just a public service message from this podcast. Please don't stab your lawyer in the back. Okay, thanks.
Oh, God. He couldn't have just had a clipboard, by the way. Like, he had to have him sign on his back. Okay. So he's on the show, and they show his fake news of him
fake news.
Killing. Yeah. They've recut the video footage to look like he wanted to massacre the Bakersfield Food Riot people.
Including POV shots. Right? So they play the video from the beginning of the movie, and they're like, but they've recut it, and like you said, to make it look like he was the one who wanted to kill everybody, not the one who didn't want to kill everybody. But they play the exact same shots, which included like the POV of the guy hitting him with the butt of his rifle to knock him unconscious at the end. So we're supposed to believe that those cameras were all there.
Yeah. They're all wearing GoPros, I guess. I don't know.
There you go.
Prizes are for winning The Running Man are a trial by jury.
Yes.
There's one, I think he says trial by jury, like mistrial or something might be one of them. And then the third one is full pardon.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I like that they range from like just a trial by jury, which what good does that do you in this world, to full pardon.
But, well, also some people win the Running Man home game, the audience members.
So, and then he says, this is where we get his catchphrase, as you referenced, where he says, I'll be back. And then, what's his name? Killian has Dawson. An even better line, which is only in a rerun.
Oh, that was so good.
Hell yeah. Right. So not only did they get the catchphrase in, but they actually made it relevant and funny and it worked. And just as you were saying, well, that doesn't make any sense. Then Killian drops the rerun line and you're like, oh, perfect.
No, fucking that was actually it. Good.
I think the best use of the I'll be back.
Absolutely.
In Arnold's career.
I agree. So, meanwhile, the girl is trying to investigate, as I said, Arnold's innocence. She really cares about it now for some reason. And this is what I love. I think, is that where she gets caught? I can't remember. But
Yeah. I think she finds the video, and then a second later, somebody catches her.
Right. And what I love here, my next note is, this is the best actor in the film. That, for me, best actor in the entire film by a mile is the lady he picks from the crowd to name the like what happens is he picks someone from a crowd and there's an audience participation to name who the stalker should be that's going to kill Arnold. And she is so good. It's some like middle-aged woman who probably, I don't know if she was in anything else, but she does a great performance as person who's really excited to be on TV and gets to pick like the stalker that's going to murder Arnold Schwarzenegger. It's so good.
Yeah, no, she was amazing. Well, that's one of the things that I really loved about this movie, like just in all seriousness, is the way that they were really able to take this brutal concept and imagine it as we would consume it. You know, yeah. And let's face it, like if this show existed, this is how we would consume it.
I know you're right. The good parts of this movie, I mean, the bad parts are so fucking bad, but the good parts of Richard Dawson and the audience and doing all like handing out the gift, like you get gifts that are related to the show, like the Running Man home board game and stuff like that. That stuff is all actually pretty good.
Yeah. Also the rocket sled tube scene is pretty good because 9% of the movie is the Paula Abdul dancers, but another 9% when they launch you into the Running Man game quadrants or whatever, you have to go down a rocket sled for 36 minutes. Yeah.
For what? There's no point. It doesn't even...
No, there's not. Just an elevator would have done the trick.
I know. It's not... There's no risks or whatever. No. Like, there's no... He doesn't have to drive it.
No, you are put in a, like, skeleton-style sled with rockets on the back and then shot through the coolest space mountain ever, right? And then you land in a nice little safe net and then Motorhead roadies, like, lift you out of the cage. It's amazing.
Yeah.
I love this. Yet another one of these. Like, I wanted to be shot into the Running Man. Absolutely.
They could have, you know what they could have at least done was made there be like some chance involved in that or like, oh, it's possible the G-force could kill you or something. I don't know, something. But it's like, no, we're just going to shoot you through a 40-minute tunnel and that's nothing. And then the game starts after that
well,
for some reason.
Anyway. And it's worth pointing out that not only do they shoot Ben Richards into the Running Man, but they shoot in his friends anyway. And his friends are Yaphet Kotto, who's amazing, right? But he's African-American, so he's contractually obligated to die halfway through Act 2 in a 1980 movie. And then Weiss, who is the computer nerd, who is, 30 pounds lighter than Noah. I mean, he's maybe a buck 05 soaking wet. And
so -5 pounds.
Yeah.
Oh.
And you can tell he does almost die from the G forces of the Space Mountain ride.
Like well, that would have made it interesting. It was like, well, that nerd couldn't cut it. Like, so then there would have been some risk to the tunnel. Otherwise it's nothing. But anyway, the first stalker is going to be Sub-Zero. And
this, by the way,
I feel like we should just let Noah go and describe this, what happens.
Okay. This is very clearly this movie doing its damnedest to like consciously win Thomas over. Right? Right? He's like, he's going to think this movie is stupid. So they bring in this character who is a gigantic Asian man in full hockey pads with a razor hockey stick and exploding pucks.
Yeah. By the way, he's in goalie pads too. So like, doesn't even make a lot of sense. But no, you're right. This is where they had my interest. I was like, okay, hold on. There's hockey's happening.
And this is old school WWF wrestler, Professor Toru Tanaka, who was a part of the tag team with one of the only other Asian. He was Hawaiian, but he played a Japanese character. And he was a tag team member with Mr. Fuji.
Hold on. Hold on a sec. What in the world went into the thinking of... Here's a gigantic Hawaiian man. What's the most natural, like, character for him to... I know it'll be the evil hockey goalie, because all the Hawaiian hockey goalies in sports history... Like, what? What? It would make almost as much sense if Jim Brown did it. It'd be, like, about the same...
And it is the classic 80s idea of diversity where they're like, well, you know, he's from that part of the world. So it's a Hawaiian guy playing a Japanese guy who comes out with a serrated hockey stick and then cuts through like an old timey Chinese gong. Like it is like watching the Super Friends. I'm telling you, it's amazing.
Oh, God. And what I love, too, is like he's skating, right? So they on an ice surface?
Well, they later, like, you have to wonder how useless he would be if they didn't happen to be in the hockey ring. Because she could have chosen anybody.
And if the battle lasts long enough, he's got to be like, hold on, we got to Zamboni this thing. I can't. Service is getting a little choppy. I don't know. I can't quite get the cuts that I need.
But somehow
they're running on ice, though. Like, they're totally fine.
They run into an ice skating rink, you know?
But they're not even slipping around. If you watched
this show before, that would help, right? You'd be like, okay, if there's an ice hockey rink, we avoid the fuck out of that because that's going to be the big Chinese guy. If there's anything flame related, let's move around that one as well. But unfortunately, they didn't watch the show. They weren't fans.
I know. That's what is so stupid about this thing is if you'd ever watched the biggest show, which we heard in the intro, it was like the second item in your post-apocalyptic world was, hey, here's the most popular TV show. But no one has ever seen it, apparently, because all you'd need to do is know, okay, as long as we just stay 2 inches off of the ice surface, then this guy can't get us.
He's like, super slow when he's got to waddle his way through on concrete.
Really dulling his edges there. I don't know, is there a sharpening?
He's got to stop and unlace him. God damn it.
So the way Arnold kills the hockey goalie thing called Sub-Zero is with barbed wire. He like wraps some barbed wire around his neck.
That's razor wire, sir.
You're right, razor wire. I'm sorry. That is a very different thing. Razor wire.
Yes. After the fucking exploding hockey puck misses him, he grabs some razor wire and garrotes this man. How is this awful? Why do you have... This should just be Laud movies. Or it should just be movies because there's no law in it either. So this should just be an episode of movies.
It's just movies. Movies. You know what? You're right.
Are we gonna pay proper homage to the two of the best one-liners here? So we get...
Go ahead.
We get Arnold staring up at the cameras, because there are cameras everywhere throughout this, right? Which is going to pose a little bit of a continuity problem in a few minutes.
Slightly.
But Arnold stares up at the camera and goes, here is Sub-Zero, now Plane Zero.
It makes no fucking sense. That doesn't even make sense.
Not a lick of sense. But
it's a single entendre.
I don't get it. I don't understand.
It's all the entendres. But then he follows it up with, he was a real pain in the neck.
Yeah.
The Schwarzenegger rule of puns is, as you, it's the calculon rule of puns. First pun, done. We're not thinking for another second. The minute you think of anything that's like a play on words, that's the one we're going with. Print it. We're done. No more thinking. Sub-Zero. Now, Plane Zero. Planes? What is Plane Zero? What?
That's not a term.
See, it's funny because he's dead. I don't see why you don't get that.
Yeah. And it's always like, he's deadly serious when it comes to, you know, sparing. Like, he gets really indignant later on about, like, how would you hunt people for sport? I don't, you're so cruel. But then the minute, like, you know, this Hawaiian's body is not even cold yet, and he's joking about it, like...
Oh, well, it was cold before because he's Sub-Zero. Yeah, I got it.
And don't forget that Ben and Yaphet Kotto walk off and like high five each other or low five each other on the camera. Oh, it's so good.
Yes. So then they've got to send another, stalker, I guess. And they also, when they kidnapped Amber earlier, when they snagged her, they somehow know, I don't know, whatever. They know that he cares about, who cares? It doesn't matter trying to keep track of the ways this movie makes no sense. But they are going to send her into the game as well. And I like it because the way they try to paint her into like a criminal is to say she's had two or three sexual partners in a year.
And cheated on her college exams. Hello. Yeah.
But like, the world in which you have these nearly naked dancers or you know, very suggestive dancers for 3 hours of your TV show is also a world in which it's a criminal offense to have two or three sexual partners. Like, make up your mind. Is this Handmaiden's Tale, or is this, You know, like,
I thought this was perfectly consistent with Trump's America, you know, where like evangelical conventions have like the highest rate of pay-per-view hotel porn. And,
you're right.
Yeah. This movie was just brutally honest.
Totally consistent with Trump's America because he can slut shame women. But then people are like, well, you had affairs with porn stars, and it doesn't matter.
Fake news.
Then he can also, the same people who get upset about, people who don't get offended about that get super offended as soon as you make a joke about Sarah Huckabee Sanders' eye makeup.
Right.
Right.
By the way, a joke that just said she had perfect eye makeup, by the way. That
yeah,
was the
right.
Joke.
No, so, it actually was not. So it was offensive. About how she was a fucking liar and a terrible human being who has made Earth much worse by existing. Yeah, and...
Yeah.
She looks like a thwomp from Mario, and she didn't even bring that up. I mean, I feel like anytime you don't make a joke about Sarah Huckabee Sanders' appearance, you should be commended. That's hard not to do.
Seeing the backlash from the White House Correspondents' Dinner just made me sit there and go, gosh, I hope they never listen to any Puzzle in a Thunderstorm show and hear Heath as Sarah Huckabee Sanders.
I hope they do.
Like, holy
but
crap.
But anyway, so now the next guy is, okay, who's the next guy?
It's two guys. It's two guys.
Yeah.
Because the guy can't decide between Dynamo and Buzzsaw, so they decide to send out both of them.
Oh.
and one is on a motorcycle. Not sure which.
Well, I just want to throw this out as a quick question. Why wouldn't Buzzsaw have a buzzsaw? Right? He has a chainsaw.
Yeah. So why isn't his name Chainsaw?
Right. Yeah. We could solve this in multiple ways.
There's more than one way to buzzsaw a cat. Yeah, I don't know, whatever that phrase is. He's got a chainsaw, but his name is Buzzsaw. I don't know if he takes you back to his garage, maybe he's got a buzzsaw.
It's on the table, though. It's a table mounted like a saw.
The contrast between these two could not be stronger, right? Like, Buzzsaw is a German bodybuilder who, like, lifted his motorcycle up over his head. And I don't think that was a – like, I think he really did that. Like, I don't think that was
I was going to say that, too. It actually did look like that wasn't fake, I don't think.
Yeah, because you see him, like –
No, he was – the guy is one of those, like, ridiculous strongman competitors. That's who they got for that role.
Yeah. And that's Buzzsaw, and then on the other side is Dynamo. Do we want to comment briefly on Dynamo's physical appearance, stamina, ability to participate in something called the Running Man? Like,
we have this morbidly obese man in full fucking. He's wearing like see-through plastic clothes covered in Christmas lights.
Is this
the
guy wearing a light bright?
Yes, he is.
Okay, yeah.
Yes. The man has donned a light bright, a giant blue mohawk. He is morbidly obese, and he's singing opera.
Yeah.
And he shoots electricity, I guess.
Yeah. He shoots electricity, like, with all the aim of a stormtrooper, and he drives a go-kart, too. Like, it's just literally everything about him is like, how do you wind up getting stuck with the Dynamo role? Like, that's the short straw in the locker room.
So no shit.
Oh, man.
Oh, man. So, here's what I want to say, though. Has there been any weapon more overrated in action movies than a chainsaw?
Like, right.
Have you ever,
especially if you're on a motorcycle?
Have you done any chainsawing? I grew up in the country. I've done a fair amount of chainsawing in my life. Not a good weapon, you know? Not a good weapon. It really isn't. It's like swinging the heaviest thing ever that's probably going to just cut your own leg off more so than anything else.
Especially with all the weight in the back. Yeah,
all the weight is right on your hand. Like, there's no, it's the opposite of like a giant, you know, like sledgehammer. It's like all the weight is sitting in your hands. There's no, it doesn't, it's bad weapon, but it looks cool. So, and then I love too, the idea that whoever makes these things doesn't know how chainsaws actually work, because according to this movie, the minute you pick up a chainsaw, it's on and running. Like, you, it was off. Like, it was motionless.
I love the idea of the scene where he can't get the ball to start going.
Yeah, I know.
Everyone who's ever used a chainsaw in real life, God damn it.
Yeah, you're like, fuck, I gotta prime the fucking pump, damn it.
Who didn't put gas in the chainsaw?
Did I put two-stroke in there? Who put fucking regular gasoline in the two-stroke engine, goddammit?
It never throws the chain or anything like that, which, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
I have never used a chainsaw for more than 2 minutes without it throwing
the chain.
The
minute you touched anything metal, it's over. There's no weapon anymore.
Yeah.
They do point out there is a, like, it's tritanium, like vibranium. Like, I forget what they say is on the chainsaw, but there's some kind of magic metal on it.
Yeah, sure. But anyway, the motorcycle guy, which I guess is Buzzsaw, Chainsaw, Buzzsaw, whatever, he gets a hold of – what I love about this is he – I think first the black friend saves Arnold because he pushes Arnold out of the way. He takes a deadly chainsaw blow. And then after that, the motorcycle guy gets Arnold on in a rope or something. And he just drags Arnold Schwarzenegger. He drags a carefree Arnold Schwarzenegger on the ground behind his motorcycle for about 25 minutes. Like, it's just – and Arnold isn't doing anything. He's not trying to turn over and untie himself. He's not struggling. He's just like, okay, I guess I'm
– He's not dirty when he gets up.
His clothes and body aren't horribly burned and, you know, mutilated from being dragged for hours. He just calmly is riding this fun ride of a being dragged behind a motorcycle.
I want to know how many of those –
Can someone explain to me how he gets the motorcycle guy? Because I actually looked down for a sec and I don't even understand it. How did he kill the motorcycle guy? What happened? Tell me. Someone's explained.
Well, he gets him off the motorcycle by using the thing, the rope that he was dragging him with as sort of like a tripwire to knock him off the motorcycle.
How did he do that? He was
There's a little bit of slack as he turns the corner. There's a little bit of slack, which would happen. And then he wraps it around an exposed piece of rebar, and then it flips Buzzsaw off the motorcycle. I'm really disappointed that you missed those times.
I know. Well, it's one of those things where I looked down and I was like, how did that just happen? I was like, well, I could rewind. And then I was like, I'm not fucking rewinding. I'll just assume something. I don't know. He did.
Meanwhile, I rewound it just because I wanted to see that scene again.
Because that's so fucking awesome. Yeah, exactly. But that's not how he takes him out, though, because then they have to have the chainsaw fight.
Oh, this is so good.
Oh, yeah, that's true. That just gets him off the motorcycle.
Yeah, and I want to point out one thing that is amazing to me about Buzzsaw. He apparently, like, not only is a chainsaw not a good weapon, but he's not very good at using it because he seems to think that it requires a lot of backswing.
Right,
I don't
feel
like that's the case.
Yeah, you're not, you don't chop down trees
right,
with the chainsaw.
Right, you're not bludgeoning someone with a chainsaw. I bludgeoned him to death with my chainsaw.
You're right. I remember now because this is what happens. He gets flung off the motorcycle and everyone thinks, oh, yeah, Richards, you know, Arnold has killed another seeker thing, stalker. And then, but the people in the know are like, no, wait, he's not gone yet. And this is where we have a playing dead Buzzsaw. He's playing dead. His chainsaw is off, and then he springs to life, and the chainsaw goes, like as he springs to life, the chainsaw knows, I guess, and turns on
it's hooked up
itself.
To his eyes, yeah.
So stupid.
Well, what I love, too, is that, like, instead of going straight for the chainsaw, when Arnold leans over and looks at him, he starts off by just grabbing Arnold, and when that doesn't work, he's like, well, I might as well use the chainsaw.
Oh, yeah, my arm doesn't have blades. That's the chainsaw thing I have.
And then Arnold, while they're fighting over the chainsaw, Arnold reaches up and is holding his wrist. So basically what we get is we get in-air arm wrestling, but attached to the end of one of the arms is a chainsaw, which if that's not the coolest sentence that I have ever uttered, I don't know what is. It's this entire sequence is like the movie Over the Top, only with a chainsaw at the end of it. Oh, it's so great.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing, because we've all seen a million times that whole, like, he tries to stab me and now that we're fighting over who's stabbing who with the knife and shit.
Right,
we've all seen that 1,000 times, but not with a fucking chainsaw.
Yeah. And this one ends with him slicing his balls off with a chainsaw.
Not just balls, like straight to the dick all the way up through the gut. Like, he cuts him in half from underneath. It's,
Yeah.
Great movie.
Yeah, I mean, that if that was the only good thing that happened, yeah.
So then we get then he finds out that, as I referenced earlier, Black Friend is dead of the chainsaw wound because he saved him. You know, he got out of the way, he's dead, he's gone. And now what I have in my next note is it's time for fucking Jim Brown as Fireball. That's our next stalker.
Well, actually, we still have – we got to get through Dynamo's a little bit, right?
Oh, you're right. I'm sorry. I skipped ahead. I'm sorry. I'll cut that.
Yeah, Dynamo's pretty forgettable. Like, right, you've got the flame guy and you've got the ice hockey guy and then you've got the opera singer. But like,
so what's happening is the girl, Amber and the dork are off trying to hack the mainframe or whatever. And the Dynamo guy finds them first, right? And then he zools them. He shocks them with laser electricity, and he kills the dork. But meanwhile, she has remembered the number. Now, what frustrates me about this is he was reading off the code.
I'm dying to know that there's only one thing. Oh, but yeah, keep going. Yeah.
Yeah. No. It's another one of those. Oh, I thought this was going to go somewhere, but it doesn't matter. He was reading her the code. And he's like, "You've got to remember these numbers. You've got to remember these numbers." And she gets one wrong, but it doesn't matter. Like, I thought that was going to matter because he's like 17, 17, blah. And she's like 17, 7, blah. And he's like, no, that's not right. And then he dies and it doesn't matter. But-
No, yeah, doesn't matter.
Yeah, no,
doesn't
so matter. So the entire upleak sequence is I had to make a note on this. It's a hexagonal decode system, and what the box has is it has like 20 different Mahjong tiles as buttons.
Yes,
and he like pushes the buttons and it causes the Commodore 64 screen to rotate and then spit out some numbers. It's great. And then you're right.
Technology.
He looks over at Amber and says, "Well, you know, I'm scheduled to die on the next page of the script."
Yeah, why can't he just remember the numbers?
and one of the numbers is B.
Yes, yeah. Right. Yeah, remember this number, B. No, I'm not. We're not.
Oh. Oh God, it's so good. It really is. I'm scheduled to die, as you said. That's for like the script says I'm about to die. So can you please remember the following numbers?
Of course, she would die too, except apparently Dynamo wants to drag her off and rape her.
Yeah, on national television.
Yeah,
we never find out if that like that's cool with the network or not. I'm not actually sure.
We don't, because Arnold shows up and he says, "Hey, Christmas tree."
Yeah.
Hey, light bulb. Tree,
yeah, lighthead. Hey, lighthead. Lighthead? Really? That sounds like a little kid trying to make up an insult.
Again, there's no second take. Calculon does one take, include, and that it goes for thinking of insults and puns as well.
Hey, microwave Dr. Pepper can. What?
Keep it. That's fine. Keep it. How does he kill this guy? But he was so forgettable.
Well, no, he didn't kill him. This is where like Arnold's conscience kicked in, right? He tricks him because he's following him in his little go-kart, and Arnold tricks him by running uphill, and the guy forgets that go-karts don't go straight up, so he rolls his go-kart. Yeah. And then Arnold could kill him, but he's like, no, I will stab a lawyer in the back with his own pen and puncture his lung, but I'm not about to kill the guy who was actively raping the love interest minutes ago.
Yeah, exactly. He's got a code. It's not a consistent code, but it's some sort of code. And you're right, so he spares him. And then that's when we it's time finally for Jim Brown as Fireball. That's going to be the next contestant here.
Wait, what happened to Buzzsaw?
He had to split.
That's what he damn sure
I'll
did.
Cut that in so that it worked. But now people are starting to support Arnold. They're starting to bet on Arnold. And I love all these. My favorite thing in these movies is when people are placing bets by waving money in the air, that's always, it's every movie is this. It's like $50 on Arnold. How are you going to remember that I made that bet and the specific odds you gave? It doesn't matter. Right? $50. There's 1,000 people saying $50 on Arnold. We'll just remember which one was which and do the proper accounting.
Can we point out that this is the first time anyone has ever bet on a runner, right? And they put him up on the board and they put up the odds at 100-1. I feel like these dumpster bookies are going broke. Like Arnold has just murdered the fuck out of everybody he's come into contact with so far.
Well, I also want to point out that in the Wikipedia, it says that when Arnold kills the first stalker, it's the first time a stalker has ever died on the show.
Yep. And they say that Killian says that when he's on the phone with the DOJ, huh?
So then how is it that people have won this show before? Because we also find out that there have been previous winners of The Running Man.
And also, what are these people betting on then, right? Every time a stalker's been sent out, he's killed the person. Then what the fuck is the bet? How many minutes of dancing girls?
It makes no fucking sense.
Maybe the previous winners escaped by just getting out of that quadrant.
Just and running. Okay, they just
the
ran.
The running man, so.
All right, I guess that could kind of make sense.
Once again, the movie is fucking, the script perfect. Is solid.
Yeah, okay, and I think there's one of my final favorite things, which is now that he's back reunited with Amber, she says, "We should have taken the trip to Hawaii." And he says, "I had the shirt for it, but you fucked it up."
I think it's a little bit. It's a little bit before that, but when Amber looks at him when she first gets thrown into the running man and is like, "They arrested me. They think I'm your girlfriend." And Arnold says what I think is honestly his best line of the movie. He's like, "Well, see that camera over there? I could strangle you for the home audience."
Then they'd know. People do that to their girlfriends all the time, unfortunately. But we should also point out, too, though, that like along the way here, they've figured out that the MacGuffin is right there in the game show place, too.
Yeah. Naturally, the satellite uplink hacked the mainframe Mahjong tiles. That the thing you need to win the movie is in the game. Because that's where no one would have looked for it, I guess.
Yeah, because who's ever looking at the thing that's covered in cameras constantly?
Look, I won't lie. A lot of this movie seems like they were just writing the script in preparation for the inevitable Atari video game adaptation of this movie. We're about to get to more of that coming up soon. But the
that was always my change of topic. That was there anything that was a more of an overrepresentation than when, now I didn't play Atari, but for NES, you would have these games that were like Top Gun or like the movies, and the cover for the game would be just a picture of the movie, and you know, or like Tom Cruise, and you're like, "Oh, I want to play that game." The actual game is like 5 pixels.
Yeah.
And, you know, like it's a square that has to like go over. It was the most false advertising ever. The cover for the video game, you'd be like, "Oh, I want to play that movie." And then it's fucking nothing. Like it's just a triangle different circles.
You have just described every Christmas Noah and I had from 1979 to 1987.
I had some of those. I was old enough to have a few of those where it's like, "That looks fucking radical." And then it's like, no, it's actually nothing.
It's a square. It's just a square.
So they're looking for the MacGuffin, as you said. And this is where I think Amber finds a mummy.
Once we meet Fireball, that's once Jim Brown gets into the picture.
Right. Well, she finds the mummy right before that. So like, I think. So she's off looking for something, but she's in like a locker room. Am I crazy? She's in a locker room. That's like a locker room of death, I guess. We don't know what it is, but in the locker room is like 3 mummies. And it turns out that they were the past winners of the show. So the winners didn't actually win freedom like you thought. They were mummified in the middle of the game. Like, what?
Well,
what?
And luckily for her benefit, they put dog tags on the mummies so she could tell who they were later.
Yeah,
and if they got
put them on these guys, but not on Ben Richards or anybody else playing the running man so far.
No, just when you have mysterious bodies laying around, and then reveal larger portions of the plot.
How hard would it be to dispose of these bodies? Like, you've got a guy who shoots fire.
Or just those dog tags.
Yeah. You've got a guy who shoots fire. Just incinerate him. There'd be no...
Yeah.
Trace, like
this,
what?
This is a job for Michael Cohen in this movie, I think. So.
Oh, man. Oh. And then the other part of it is we know that when Mr. Fireball, what's his name? Yeah, it's Fireball. When Fireball, Jim Brown, pops in to kill her, there's cameras on them.
Yeah.
Like, the whole time. So, like, does the audience see the mummies with the dog tags or not?
Well, they can't read the dog tags. They assume that she walked in there and mummified a couple of motherfuckers. Right?
Yeah. In a locker room for some reason. Yeah. I still don't know that. So then, who wants to describe this fire battle? I don't know. You'll do a better job than I will.
Yeah, so this is Jim Brown at the he was 50 years young. When they filmed this, and his Jesus. Weapon is a flamethrower, and they show inadvertently what a terrible weapon that is at the very beginning, like when they're introducing him on stage, because they have like a cardboard cutout pop up, and then he takes him out with the flamethrower, and you think to yourself, wow, would that guy have a lot of time to shoot you before dying, because it's a flamethrower,
yeah, like,
and
now
that's
hold
a dumb
still
weapon.
For 10 minutes, and yeah. You'll get some second-degree burns.
Yeah, but so then they Fireball shows up. Now, Fireball also has a jetpack.
A jetpack.
And what he does is, oh, fuck, yeah, man, because it's because this movie is perfect. But what he does with his jetpack is he lands 40 yards away from Arnold and the girl and then starts running after
right,
them.
Right, right.
You know, because you got to give him a head start, otherwise it's not fun.
Right. He doesn't just fireball them from above.
No, yeah, that would be
while
unfair.
He has to jump on him. Yeah.
So,
man.
But then they chase him into this like industrial warehouse or whatever. And there's just this one moment that I love so much because she's like, "I want to go this way," and then Arnold's like, "No, we're going this way." He drags him the other way, and it turns out that Arnold's way leads directly to Jim Brown throwing fire at him. And I thought to myself, "This is exactly like every time I've ever watched Anna try to give Eli directions." So that's a narrow cast joke, but if you've ever seen that happen, you get it.
I feel like there is no stalker in this movie that is as dangerous to life or limb as Eli driving. So
definitely. And also, there's no stalker in this movie that's remotely competent. Like, how have they been killing runners? You know, like, they're terrible. They're all morons.
Yeah, I mean, like,
no.
When Sub-Zero had the dorky guy on the end of his serrated hockey stick and just used it to push him into a goal. Like, yeah. They,
yeah,
like,
was he playing hockey or was he killing people?
He forgets sometimes, you know.
Yeah,
all mixed
he's really,
up.
Yeah. So, he kills him by, I think he, like, unplugs his gas line and then throws a flare on him.
Oh, yeah,
so
no, Arnold is hiding in the ceiling, a la Tom Cruise in The Firm.
And he's then, hiding in the ceiling.
And then drops down on Jim Brown.
He waits until he's done monologuing, though. He's not going to interrupt him mid-monologue here or anything.
Oh, it's so good. Reaches down, yanks the gas line out.
And we get another pun.
Oh, we
get two more puns.
Oh, okay.
We get...
I had one.
How about a light?
Right. Yeah, before he throws the flare right. And he goes, how about the light?
Right as our hero straight up murders the incapacitated stalker.
Yeah, what? I thought you had a rule a second ago.
Nope.
You had a code, and now it's... No, instead of that, mercy, and I'm going to burn someone to death. That's kind of different than those.
And,
you know,
and then I'm going to say, what a hothead, just so you know, I don't give two shits about the human that I just murdered. Yeah,
what a hothead.
So now we're running out of stalkers.
Yeah, there's only one more, in fact, in the entire planet, I guess. And that's Jesse Ventura, who's a retired stalker.
Yeah.
And he doesn't. Now, I don't. Can someone explain his motivation? Like, I don't really get this because... not Dweezil Zappa. Richard Dawson wants him to be the next stalker, but Jesse Ventura's like, no, I'm not going to do it or something. Like,
well, they want him to fake it, right? Because they don't want to send another guy up against Ben Richards and have him get killed.
Is that right? Because he comes in wearing this weird metal suit, and his complaint is, hold on, his complaint is, I'm not going to wear this metal bullshit. I you know, it's a warrior code. Like, I go fight. I've been killing men for 10 years or something. But then, yeah, you think that is the metal suit involved in faking?
Well,
is that what it is?
The, Well, he doesn't want to wear the metal suit either, but what he's complaining about is that they want him to go in and kill a stunt double that they're going to then make look like Arnold Schwarzenegger for the TV thing.
Oh, okay. I thought that he didn't want to do it, and then they faked it anyway. Okay. I didn't understand. I was confused by the metal suit, because he's like, I'm not doing
just,
this. Like,
they
what?
Just dressed him up like fucking Robbie the Robot for no goddamn reason.
Yeah. It was very confusing. Okay, so that's what happened.
Yeah, and Governor, so right before he gets into this, like, total discount, you know, tin suit, yeah. you see what is it? There's no doubt in my mind that this was just accidentally shot and they left it in, but it's a long lingering scene of Jesse the Body Ventura just admiring himself in the mirror,
yes.
Which is 100% authentic. And then we get the monologue about how this is a sport of honor and I was killing guys like this with my bare hands 10 years. Oh, this is so good.
He did a pretty good job. I'll be honest. Like I liked him a lot. He had the perfect voice for it, and like, dude was that was a good looking dude back in the day. He was Jesse the Body Ventura, that's for sure.
This was a perfectly cast film, is what you're saying. I agree,
including Dweezil Zappa as Stevie.
Stevie. Oh, you know, it never even occurred to me. Do you think that's a Stevie Nicks
reference? It is absolutely a Stevie Nicks reference.
Oh, that's funny. That literally just occurred to me now. I've seen this movie 86 times. Yeah, there we go.
Yeah, because I guess they've reconnoitered with the rebel group that's in the game now or something. Is that what?
Yeah,
what
the rebel group hides their hideout in the middle of this camera covered 400 square block game field.
Yep. That's the way you want to do
it. This is the first point in the movie in which I thought there might be a slight problem with the plot. I want to say in the middle of a heavily guarded, government controlled war zone / game show
with cameras on every square inch.
Yeah.
I was a little surprised to see Mick Fleetwood in the movie.
So, Mick Fleetwood and Dweezil Zappa, they're going to, you know, they're going to storm the castle, whatever. And they're going to with gun. Now, what I love about. Okay, there's so much here. They're going to storm the place. They're going to take over and they're going to do the uplink of the real video. Now, why they need to invade when they have the uplink, I don't understand.
Well, because they explain that, because then they would shut down, they would shunt that satellite and move on to a different one.
All right.
It all makes sense, Thomas, except for Dweezil really Zappa doesn't. Being in that. So.
What I love, though, is Dweezil Zappa has a great line. He has a fantastic line here, one-liner, because they burst in where the guy, we didn't even mention, what's his name? I think his name is Kurt Fuller, the guy who's in, like, Ghostbusters and a couple of, he's always the Weasley character, you know, that guy. He's also in a very brief role in this movie as one of the kind of producers of the show. And so Dweezil Zappa and company just burst in with their guns, and he says, "Don't touch that dial,"
which is, of course, a reference to
Frank Zappa.
Yeah,
I love it. But the second meaning is, of course, don't shut down the show because they want to, or don't shut down the satellite, whatever the fuck. I don't know.
That's how well written this movie is. That exactly. Even though that's just layers. Clearly a line from a Frank Zappa song, it also, even if you didn't know that, makes sense and is funny in the moment.
Layers. That's they actually got a double meaning versus when Arnold just says something that there's no second.
Now he's playing
meaning.
Zero. Yeah.
did we pass over when they had the fake scene of Captain Freedom, Jesse the Body Ventura, murdering the stunt double,
yeah.
Which, by the way, legally speaking, that's another thing. If you have the right contract, you can totally. Game show host can kill a stunt double.
Oh,
long established precedent.
That's what wasn't clear. I think they actually did say, we're gonna put Arnold and Amber's, you know, likenesses on stunt doubles and then actually murder stunt doubles?
Yeah.
Because they didn't, I don't think they faked it. right?
No, well, they say at the end, the girl says, well, gee, Damon, you didn't have to actually kill him. And Damon Killian is like, yeah, but I mean, I could, so I did. Why would I not?
My name's Damon Killian. Yeah, like, what do you expect around here?
And we get, and I just need a shout out to this, as they're VOing the end of the supposed capture and execution of Ben Richards, we get Captain Freedom proving once again that right and might are one and the same. I'm thinking of getting that tattooed on my back. So
this movie's good.
But how did somebody? Okay, so then another. I hate to alarm you folks, but there's might be another inconsistency in the story here, because again, how could anyone have ever won this game if the final phase is you get locked into a room that has spikes on the walls, and either you die or Captain America or whatever his fucking name is dies. Captain Freedom. There's only two options there. There's no ties. When it comes to the room of sword death.
I think what they did, though, to try to get around that is, right as you were starting to think about that, they had the scene where they suggested that Amber had that video disc shoved up her ass for the rest of the movie.
Oh, my God.
And so they were hoping you'd be thinking more about that.
Yeah. So she mysteriously has the proper files from the actual... So the actual footage of the Bakersfield massacre... And Arnold says, where were you hiding that? Because she went through the same medical procedures of, whatever you go through before getting injected into the Running Man. So how the hell did she smuggle that in? And she says, never you mind, essentially.
Yes.
Look over there, everybody. I kept it in my vagina or something, I guess.
Well,
I don't.
What's so funny is that, like, when she pulls it out, she's like, produces it. And I wrote into my notes, okay, which means she obviously had that in her ass. And then Arnold's like, what, did you have that in your ass? And she's like, oh, I had it.
Yep. In my ass. A lady never tells, I guess. And so what I love about the firefight in this, if you go back and watch, is every time they're firing a gun, it's just they're wobbling it all the fucking over. I think it's something that might have been true in a lot of older action movies that I think they've actually tightened up a little bit in modern years. Like every time someone's firing a machine gun, they're just waving it all around. Like it's not this very inaccurate firing. And it's really funny to go watch. But
interestingly enough, Arnold is one of the main reasons why that was changed. Arnold was one of the first action stars that actually went out and learned how to handle all of the firearms that he was going to be using.
Well,
it
must have been after this movie.
No, actually, well, I don't know. I'm not a gun guy, but I've seen a lot of people like breaking down Arnold's gun handling skills in his movies and being very complimentary of him. But like everyone else who has one is just like, you know, using it like a goddamn
Dweezil
super
doesn't
soaker.
Know how to fire.
No,
a weapon,
Dweezil's not super Sammy.
And can we point out that this gun battle takes place, right? The ICS soldiers are up on the stage and in the balconies. And then, Arnold, leading this ragtag group of, Dweezil Zappa's soldiers, bursts in through the hallway, and in between those two places are 1,000 members of the studio audience.
Yes. None of whom gets hurt.
No.
Yeah. No, it's definitely like an episode of G.I. Joe. Like, yes. I expected to see like parachutes coming out. Oh, my God. This battle is great.
Honestly, I'm looking at the rest of my notes and they're not really understandable. I'm realizing that I kind of might have lost a little bit of steam when it comes to keeping track of what the fuck is happening in this stupid movie. I have Amber electrocutes the electricity dude. Would somebody?
Yeah.
Yeah. What we got there?
So Amber is going out because she's got to like switch the thing to turn on the thing. And yeah, and then Dynamo catches up with her because, he survived the whole thing and decides to rape her in the hallway.
Mm-hmm. That dude
really
Dynamo
is
dedicated.
Dynamo is just walking around pantsless.
He's just ready to rape in a moment's
notice. We see his
tidy
whities.
Yeah.
He had one thing on his mind through the whole movie, I guess.
Clearly.
And yeah. And then she like kind of accidentally triggers a sprinkler, right?
Yeah, she fires the gun, and that turns the sprinklers on, which electrocute him because he just walks around in a position where a light rain would kill him at a moment's notice all the time.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, he didn't really think
that
one through.
He's the Wicked Witch of the West. That's the way to think about it.
Oh, that's so funny. And so that's how he dies. And then, okay, there's some weird shit happens because we get to the eventual showdown, which is, you know, Arnold has found Killian. The whole studio audience is like, I guess, hiding. Like you said, they're like huddled somewhere. They're safe, I guess. It's just Arnold and Killian. And then the security guard, who kind of looks like Kurt Warner. I don't know if it's – who is it actually?
He does look like Kurt Warner.
It would have been Kurt Warner if this movie was like 15 years later, I think. But anyway, Killian, you know, Richard Dawson is like calls him. He's like, come here, Kurt Warner. And then the security guard comes out and you think there's going to be like a showdown or a fight or a whatever. But the security
main
guard –
battles are best when they're feigned.
Yeah, like what? Someone explain what happens here, because I honestly don't understand.
Well, so throughout the movie, we keep getting these flashes of the people who work for Richard Dawson hating him and disliking him more and more. And at some point, he made a joke about like meatheads and steroids or something around this security guard. So when Dawson calls on him to fight Arnold, he's like, man, fuck you. Okay. It was just a sort of like, you know, we're sick of the mean boss.
But they
boss
didn't.
Thing.
They didn't play it up enough because, like, no. Dawson, like, he just leaves. The security guard, Kurt Warner, just like is like, I'm out of here. He doesn't really say much. And he just like turns around, and then Dawson isn't sure what's going on, and then Arnold just puts Dawson in the tube. he just puts him in the tube.
It's such a fucking weird way to kill the bad guy, right? Because he puts him in the rocket sled that they all rode down, but like the rocket sled didn't kill or even hurt them.
It just so happens
that they've taken the net away here, and so he flies into the explodey thing they keep behind the net.
He crashes the. It goes through Space Mountain. It crashes the rocket sled through a billboard, and then instantly explodes like a Ford Pinto. Like it's so great.
And then, because you know those sleds that you ride often have a large tank of jet fuel on them.
And they usually strap blasting caps to the back of all of those various billboards you see just in case.
and then we get the line.
Yep.
Well, that hit the spot. Because he hit a spot.
He hit a billboard of his own face.
And there was a spot there that he hit. That really hit the spot. Mm-hmm.
And that was the slogan for Cadre Cola.
All right. That I missed.
Sense.
All right.
So it was a triple entendre.
And I should point out, by the way, in case you're curious, in case anybody's wondering about the timing and they're not as old as Andrew and myself, yes, this movie came out before American Gladiators, and yes, this movie inspired American Gladiators.
Oh, nice. Yeah, no doubt about it.
So yeah, they wouldn't come out and admit it as much, so.
This is where we go back to the thing that you referenced early on that is the flaw in all these movies, because the audience saw when Dweezil put on the satellite uplink, they had like, you know, a 2.5 minute YouTube video where they explain like, here's what's really going on behind the news. And, you know, they show the real footage of Arnold not killing the Bakersfield people and all that. And so after a 2.5 minute video, the entire audience who was just previously idolizing Richard Dawson, Damon Killian, he was a hero to them. They were upset. They're at the show. They're the studio fucking audience for their favorite show. He's their hero. They see 2 minutes of video, and now they're all on Arnold's side. They're like, oh, my God, kill him. Murder the guy. And they're cheering when he dies. As though
I've seen that happen in podcasting, though.
my note I have is I have the exterior audience is waving Kekistani flags and chanting USA, but you know, but I think Noah's is better.
But the amazing thing here to me is that okay, so now the people know the truth and Arnold gets the girl because back in the 80s, if you saved someone or did something heroic, you earned a vaginal test drive. That's how it worked back then. but like, what has been solved?
Yeah.
Right? Like, it's still nothing. Like there's still no food. We're still dystopian paramilitary zones. All of that shit's still there. They just need a new host for the Running Man.
Yeah. No, I totally agree. And like, what I wanted to point out is, if the audience is willing to cheer the death of someone because they saw 2 minutes of video, even though, sure, that was ultimately the truth. That's the very credulity that's caused the problem in the first place.
Yeah,
if you're
right.
able to see a 2 minute video and then cheer for someone's head that you previously idolized, you know, one way or the other, that's not a good thing. You haven't solved anything in this movie.
No, yeah, I wrote in like, and they all live somethingly ever after.
This is another one of the things I legitimately, no joking, really like about this movie is when Arnold and Maria Conchita Alonso, Amber, arrive at the Resistance headquarters, like Mick Fleetwood's plan, because he doesn't know that she's got the Bakersfield footage. His plan is to hijack the network and then like deliver a monologue, right?
Yeah.
Like, and that's totally, it is so perfect. Dead on of like, well, then I will just get on and give them an inspiring lecture about Marx. And
I'd be like, we the people are tired of being lied to. Kill that man. Okay. Oh, man. So that's our movie. Anything? Did we miss any one-liners that you guys
I think we skipped over like 4 or 5 of them that Andrew had written in his notes here. I noticed at one point, I'm like, oh, man, he's missing like numbers 5 through 8. There's some amazing
shit. If you want to just like, rattle them off in a row,
okay,
you feel free.
All right, so jam the network, jam it up your ass. You guys don't shut up about that uplink. I'll be uplinking your ass. Those are both actual lines we missed. I think those might be the only two. Wait, is there another one? I'm looking through. I think those are the only ones we missed, but those were so amazing. That's worth going back for.
See, this is why you need to have Rob Schneider in your film for your comic relief. You can't rely on the action hero. Like in Judge Dredd, you have Rob Schneider to deliver nothing, like no funny lines.
Oh, God.
Oh man, good times. All right, well, that's our movie. I hope you're fucking happy with yourselves, listeners.
Let us be a lesson. Happier with our listeners.
Yeah. Now, will we be doing a legal drama next, or will we be doing Predator? Or so, you know, like,
please,
I'm
guys,
down for
everybody.
Predator. If we want to do Predator, I'll do that with you guys next month.
Yeah. Everybody, go on to patreon.com/law and vote for Predator with No Illusions. We're gonna have to change this segment. It'll no longer be
Noah's
awful
gonna
movies.
Have another podcast. It's
gonna, yeah, it's like, just gonna be Noah, Andrew, and occasionally Thomas watch movies that are awesome.
Laud Arnold movies.
I'm in.
Arnold movies. Oh my God. You are a genius, Thomas. Oh.
You should be an action hero with pun skills like that.
Oh, God. All right. Noah, feel free to give out your many plugs. I think we have as many podcasts as each other now or something.
We're very close to tied. I don't know. Yeah. But you can check us out on The Scathing Atheist, on Skeptocrat, on God Awful Movies, or on Citation Needed. One of the podcasts called Citation. It wasn't great name choice. But
there another one that had it or something?
There wasn't another podcast, but then like another podcast started right afterwards called Citations Needed. And so like, guys, come on. And then it became like a popular one that ended up on like a bunch of best of the year lists and everybody's congratulating us. And we're like, no, we're dick jokes.
Oh,
guys.
No. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Noah. And of course, thank you so much for allowing us to borrow the name of God Awful Movies, which is, of course, the great podcast that started it all when it comes to this kind of thing. We owe it to you. And that's where Lot Awful Movies is ripped off from, in case any of our new listeners were not aware. Noah is one of the greats that started that show. Go listen to it if you haven't. It's good stuff.
Aw.
All right. Well, that's it. We'll see if we're going to actually do a legal movie next month. We'll see you guys then. Thanks so much for being patrons. And we hope you enjoyed Lot Arnold Movies.